We had a lot of good conversations taking place. We'll make a couple of announcements here. Get to our speaker.
Hey, Kurt, the mic's not on.
Can you hear better now?
Oh, this could be a problem. I'm going to have to lean over the whole time. Oh, my.
All right, so a couple of quick announcements. Leonard Scarborough couldn't be here this morning either, but he did ask that we mention the next DARE trip has been scheduled. It is Central and West Georgia. That is March 15th and 16th. That just happens to be the same weekend as the women's retreat. So it'll play out nicely if your wife is going on that retreat. Contact him for more information, and I have his contact info available if you'd like to get that. Financial Peace University, yours truly is leading that beginning February 25th. That is a Sunday, 4:30 to 6:30 in the dining room here. I have flyers available if you would like one or if you know someone who should receive one. We also have a men's retreat happening March 22nd through 24th. It's being sponsored by Radical Mentoring. It is at Strong Rock Camp in Cleveland, Georgia. The cost is $200, includes your lodging, most meals, registration, and transportation if needed. Eric, anything you want to add to me?
So I don't see Jason here this morning. Jason may have gotten us a house close to the location, so we may have a separate facility and be driving back and forth. And it is Palm Sunday weekend. It was pointed out to me by my spouse. And so if any of that's a complication or is easier for you, those options, I think, will be available. So coming back up for Sunday morning will not be a problem. And if the camp style living at Strong Rock is something you'd rather
avoid,
then we're going to have a house nearby.
Yeah. Jason has also mentioned that there may be an early arrival Thursday evening and stakes involved. So
the question is if they're there.
There could be. All right. And then our final announcement, I'm going to let Ben speak on.
Hello.
Good morning. Ben Mayfield, I'm the pastor to students here at RUMC. I met y'all, I guess, back in, it was like September. I got the honor to come speak to y'all, so thank you for letting me come back here to speak to you. We have a thing called Alter Your Life Weekend, AYL Weekend. Has anyone not heard of it?
No.
Who has heard of it?
There you go. All
right. One of the things I really love about it, especially when I'm talking to new people, even our communications team, I love them a lot, but it's spelled A-L-T-A-R, alter your life, meaning that going to the altar, giving your life to God, surrendering all the things that you have can alter, A-L-T-E-R, your life. And so that's what we're really focusing on this weekend is not just the entertainment factor, but really trying to engage them with just worship, true, authentic worship. If you don't know, sometimes students get a bad rap for just being rowdy and wild, and that's true. Trust me, it's very true. But they also have a hunger for the Lord, and it's so real, and they're trying to search, especially that season of their life, search for something that has meaningful to it. And so that weekend is a really powerful weekend. I'm looking forward to it. But we also need help. This is what I love about this church is it's not just a student ministry thing, and then everybody just kind of goes, they do their own thing. It's a church-wide event, and we need to come together as a church, and we have some needs. If one of these needs, and we can do that, that'd be awesome. If you want to pray about it, come back to me later. That's also totally acceptable. The first thing that we really need is prayer. I know that sounds frivolous just to say we need prayer, but these are students who potentially could give their life to the Lord and be on a path of just becoming disciples of Jesus. And prayer is powerful. Prayer is real and is very much needed. Before, like this upcoming week, prayer after the event, prayer, just that they can discern what the Lord has been speaking to them that weekend. But during that weekend, we have two prayer opportunities. One is we have a prayer room that will be near the Chapel Roswell where people can actually come and different sign up for different time shifts. And we'll have some that has all the names displayed, all the leaders, all the kids. And you can actually come and physically pray over those names and just be in there and sit there with God. We also have a prayer visual. I can't pronounce that word. But it'll be a 24-hour prayer. So from the start of Friday until we end on Sunday, there will be someone praying for that event for the, 48 hours in a row. And so we're really excited about that. So if that is something that interests you, if you're like, I'll do the 2 a.m. shift, you're a hero. 3 a.m. shift, hero. If you're like, I'll do the 4 o'clock p.m., still a hero. But it's just not the same as like 4 a.m. But no, we appreciate the prayer for that. The second thing we need is around 11:45 on that Saturday, February 10th. I know you're all going to write this down and remember this. February 10th, about 11:45 a.m., we have Must Ministries food pantry coming in here, and we're doing a project. But we have to unload, like, hundreds and hundreds of not thousands of pounds of stuff for the kids. And we need some physical help, some arrangement help. Marion has got to get the whole place organized. And so if you're interested in that type of mission work and helping out, it'd be from about 11:45. And you can stay the whole time, or you can stay for an hour, you can stay for 30 minutes, or whatever it may be. So that's February 10th at that time. And the last thing is we need host homes. Host homes are what the kids go to. They go to a host home. They'll be there Friday evening, and then they'll come here. Then they come back Friday night, spend the night. They'll come. You'll have dinner at the house. They'll have Saturday morning breakfast, and then they'll come here for the whole day. Pretty much go back there for dinner, and then come back here for the Saturday night worship, and then they go back to your house. So there's a lot of driving back and forth. But it means that you host them and help provide meals. Now, if some of you are like, I have the house, but I don't really want to cook a bunch of meals, or I can cook meals, but I don't have the house, that's what we call community and partnership. I know you fellas are buddies. Y'all can team up. So one of you provides a house, one of you can help provide meals. Y'all come up, and we have, if you don't know Chad Miller, he's a firefighter. Y'all know Chad. One of his groups, ninth grade boys, needs a home. So putting that out there, would be really appreciative of that. Any questions? No AYL? Who's all excited for it, huh? Yeah, we got a couple. Hey, but for real, we really appreciate it. And thank y'all for giving the time to come and ask y'all as the men's disciple group just to be part of this walk ministry with us and walk alongside us in this weekend. So thank y'all.
I want to say one more thing about AYL. When we talk about host home, this is not a 4-star accommodation. That's not what these guys are looking for. They're looking for a flat space, maybe a floor that they can put their sleeping bags on. It is not, you do not have to become the Holiday Inn. And you get this incredible privilege of picking the kids up after Saturday night service. And to hear the emotional engagement of kids riding in your car and what has just transpired for them is a real privilege. So do not feel like if you open up your home, you need to lay down new carpet and you need to buy new couches. You don't. They just want to camp out someplace, and it means a lot to them to not be in their normal so they can experience something that's extraordinary. It is stressful for the parents who are not used to having other people's kids in their houses, but it is very rewarding to do that. Who here has been a host home before? All right. You can talk to those folks and they will tell you that it was nowhere near as intense as, or as stressful as they probably thought it was when they said yes the first time. So great. I have the privilege this morning to get to introduce our speaker. I met Lance because he was doing a favor for somebody else. I was going on a walk to Emmaus. If you'd ever like to talk about walk to Emmaus, I'm always happy to chat about that. And Jason was my sponsor, but Jason could not drive me from the Dodd to the weekend retreat center, which is about an hour and a half away. And so he asked Lance to do that, who'd been on a walk to Emmaus before. So I had really not met Lance. I had a phone number. We texted, and I showed up in the parking lot of the Dodd. And so I got into this car with this guy that I had never really met before, but my daughter had. And so because Lance has been a part of confirmation for a while, Mary knew Lance. And so I said, what's this guy like? You know, all the things that you do. So I got into his car anyway.
And boom, right there. Yeah, I like it.
And I knew within, I don't know, 5 minutes that I was exactly where I was supposed to be. Lance had had something going on in his family. And despite a schedule that would anybody would have said, oh, man, you don't need to be driving people to Emmaus. You need to be focused on you and your family. Instead, he took time out and he picked me up, somebody he did not know, drove me across town, and we had a dinner together. And by the time he dropped me off at the retreat center, I had gotten to know him. You're privileged in life when you get to know people, when things are all good and easy and fun and you're just out having steak together. But you're honored in life when God places you in proximity with other people and you get to know them with a capital K. And so it's my privilege to have Lance come up and tell you more of his story. And I think you'll find him worth listening to. There you go.
Thank you, Eric. Can everybody hear me okay? Yep, thumbs up. All right. Well, the one thing Eric left out is it was a pleasure driving him, and I've driven a few others in combination. And my objective, obviously, is their hearts at ease, knowing that they're truly going to have a glorious event in their lives. I think Eric would attest to that. But it's not me, it's God working through me, and just like you, that anybody that puts themselves in that position. This morning, I'm honored that Ken invited me to come. He didn't let me know that he wasn't going to be here, though. But I understand he's on. Say hi. And in fact, it's a challenging morning when you wake up and you're thinking, God's going to gift me today. And you get out and you think you got plenty of time, your window is frozen over. So that's a little humor on God's side. But then he did grace me because I hit every green light on the way here. So he wants me to be here. A little bit about myself. I've been in Atlanta for over 30 years. I don't want to age myself too much. Originally from Oklahoma, go Sooners. I am a new grandpa. And with that, for some reason, my family think I'm very outspoken. I'm a little loud. Haven't figured that one out yet. Crowds don't seem to bother me. But my nickname is Boomer. So that's my grandpa name. So Boomer. And if I'm walking through Walmart and I see anything Oklahoma related, I'm automatically going Boomer. And of course, they respond sooner. There you go. Got somebody in the crowd already. So anyway, my focus this morning is on family and to some extent, paying it forward, doing better than the ones before you. And basically walking a path with God, guiding me through the life of second chances. And I'm sure a lot of us here would agree that we've had several second chances in life. I'm gonna read something real quick in terms of food for thought. And by the way, I will keep it as quick as I can. I was told I had 20 minutes and I only have 10. So this is gonna be a fun one. Food for thought. We may think that faithful Christians fare better than others when it comes to good things coming our way and illnesses passing us by. And this is a book, if you're not familiar with it, I highly recommend. It's called With. But passing us by, which is life from God. But this is not how it goes. If it were that way, people would flock to being Christian simply for the blessings. God helps us through adversity and to grow our faith in countless ways so that we may help others, interpreted as being with God. Read a quick scripture here before I kick this off. Actually, I'm going to go right into it with time. So we're all influenced by our family's history while having faith in God's plan for each of us, right? I mean, God has a plan. We all typically believe, hopefully you believe that. I know I do. He's proven it many times. So a little family history on my end. One of my quotes that my dad shared, and I had forgotten until I went through, I recently lost him about 2 years ago and served as power of attorney. That's always an interesting thing to do for a family member, but it all worked. But found a quote that I had forgotten to be shared many times in the past. It said, some family trees bear an enormous crop of nuts. So I like to think some of you would probably get rid of them, maybe the word enormous, but there's definitely nuts out there in our families, no doubt. And some would probably in my family point at me. But there's generations of dysfunction in my family. A little history. My did not obviously know my great-great-grandfather, but what I do know is that my grandfather on my dad's side ran away from home when he was just starting high school. And it was farming was what they knew back in the day. Obviously, that was very prevalent. And the reason he ran away is the atypical teenagers, like, I can do it my way. As long as I get the job done, I'm good. Well, according to his dad, there was only one way to do it, and it was his way. So it was constantly butting of heads. And it became a physical relationship, unfortunately. And so he decided to run away, living with his uncle. But it turned out fine. He ended up going to high school and being an all-around athlete, surprisingly, that was great news. And flourished in that respect and graduated from high school and met his high school, his wife, my grandmother, in the process. And if he would not have run away from home, he probably would never have met her. So, you know, life has a plan, right? And in the process, they had four children, my dad being the eldest. In the process of his birth, World War II came around, and they moved around. So farming was not a part of his life initially, but after the war, they went to California, and to stay out of the war, my grandfather ended up working in the shipyard. So war ends and they come back to Oklahoma, and my dad learns what it's like to live on a farm. And, you know, basically the whole concept of living on a farm, I've not done it, but it's you do your chores before you eat your meals. The chores come first. And so he learned the aspect of work ethic in the process. The unfortunate aspect is my grandfather, and this comes back to the storyline of paying it forward and from parental perspective, but my grandfather obviously wasn't mentored well in the aspect of parenting. So from that, my dad was the eldest, as I stated, and from that he had a brother, the 2 years younger, and my grandfather's way of disciplining him was when they got in altercations, he put boxing gloves on them and said, last man standing wins. That was his rule. So the unfortunate aspect is that, of course, created a rift between he and his brother, and they never mended the rest of their lives. And unfortunately, too, on that side of the family, it paid forward because my Uncle Tom did the same thing with his two boys. So not good from my perspective, but it's in those two, my two cousins, the brothers to this day don't get along well. So it's sad, but that's the reality of what happened. So I most likely would have happened with me, but I didn't have a brother. I had a sister. So I was broken from that chain in that respect. All right. So fast forward. So I gave you a little insight about my dad, but there was a lot of respect for my dad too. He put himself through college. And with that, he was a roughneck. Very hard labor, but in the same vein, according to my mom, he was buff. So that was one of the things that got her attention. And with that, he was also my mother's favorite, and that didn't help his brother in terms of growing up, trying to get his dad's attention and knowing that his older brother was his mother's favorite. So the skipping down to my mother and giving you that side of the story, so my mom came from Silver Spoon, upper middle class, grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And I did not know that this part of it until about 2 years ago
And that was one of the shockers. So just imagine your only child, which is a part of a theme of our family. My mom's an only child. I married an only child. My oldest son married an only child. So you got something going here. But it's working. Anyway, when she started high school, the family moved. And she ended up moving into the master bedroom. So I don't know any child that ever got the master bedroom, but that was my mom. So she was a little entitled through her life, right? And so you got a little bit of oil and water. So they're going through college. And the other background of my mom, the unfortunate aspect is I never got to know my grandmother, my mom's side. She lived her life through her daughter, her only daughter. And she was, her dad was a workaholic. He was not present. And in that process, when she left for college, her mother lost in her own mind, her meaning in life, her purpose in life. So she became an alcoholic. And when my mom would come home, as the story goes, from college, it went from bad to worse in terms of the state that she found her mother in. By the time she was a senior, her mom was consistently passed out to the point one time back in the day, you had floor grates or vents with the heat coming, and she had passed out and her face was on the vent. She didn't even wake up and burned her face. So at that point, my mom decided she had to take action because her dad was not taking action and put her in the hospital. And in that day, they didn't know we know today, and it was taking her off of the bottle without detox process. So within 4 days, her mother passed. And the other aspect of that, which I give my mother total grace for, is that her grandmother on her mother's side then blamed my mom for her mother, for her mother's death, for my grandmother's daughter's death. So you can imagine what she went through in that process, being a senior in college and trying to find her next step in life. So she wanted to escape. And her escape was marrying the man she was dating, which happened to be my father. So the well and water aspect of it is, of course, he came from not poverty, but they never had money of any consequence. They were putting, you know, bread on the table and being able to eat and manage their lives, where my mom knew the other side of the story. And so he could never really live up to her expectation, but he did thrive in his own way. He was successful through connections and with friendships and career opportunities, and ended up becoming director of Alumni Association at the University of Oklahoma. And I was very proud in terms of what I perceived going on and being able to plug in and participate as a teenager in that process and be a part of the university, and got to know a lot of the staff and professors, et cetera. And so as I went into high school, I was excited about the prospect of going to Oklahoma, even though I joked with my dad saying, University of Texas has a pretty good business school. He made it very clear. He had three options, read between the fingers, but three options, and said, don't pick the middle one. It's all going to be Oklahoma. That's where the money is. So anyway, but from in that respect, I will say that I was at probably my pinnacle of my life. Even though my parents were not getting along, there was never a loving relationship between my mother and father. And like I said, my dad was pretty much running away there towards the end, and an absent father, just like my mother's father was. So reliving that in her mind. But it was not a happy home, and he was trying to escape in his own way. I went from kind of being in a cocoon to really flourishing my junior and senior year in high school, probably the happiest time of my life. What transpired is I ran away in a blessed way. I went to summer camp. So 7 different summers, I went to a summer camp based on a Christian camp. And it really opened my eyes to realizing there's another life out there. And growing up, all we did was go to church on Sundays, and we did not become a part of the church community. And there was no prayer at dinner or anything else in that respect. So I was not taught about Christ other than summer camp. By the time I was 14 years of age, I accepted Christ at summer camp. The challenge for me was coming home and falling back into the norms of my childhood. But the difference was when I turned 14 and accepted Christ, starting high school by 15, I realized that I needed to circle myself with other Christians. So I was very blessed. God really blessed me in that respect. To this day, some of my best friends, and from my heart, my best friends are from high school and rock group of Christian friends. And we actually started a Tuesday morning Bible study on campus at Norman High back in the day. And obviously, being in Norman, Oklahoma, University of Oklahoma there, probably a third of my friends also went to college with me. So what changed? So I'm at the pinnacle of my life. I'm really enjoying where I am in my walk. And spiritually, I really feel like I'm on fire and wanting to expand my relationship with God in the process. Well, I got thrown a little curveball. And this comes back to the aspects of adversity, obviously. I did not know it. I was clueless in this respect, but my parents got divorced within probably a year before I went to college. I knew that that was coming because there was never love in that relationship. What I didn't know is what my dad shared with me as I am within 2 weeks of starting college. And we went to lunch and he shared with me that he was homosexual. So understand, we're talking 1981. In 1981, Reagan was just starting his second year in his term, first term, and AIDS was just discovered. So nobody was coming out of the closet. Nobody was wanting to advertise in any way, shape, or form that they were homosexual. And I didn't know much about it. And from what it led me down the path was a kind of a discovery of, well, what does that make me? Okay, is that genetic? I don't know. And my dad wasn't much help because as soon as he informed me what he had chosen to do in his life and become a homosexual and was then living with another man, he had moved out of town. So he was out of my life, which in part was, I guess a blessing in its own disguise because I didn't have to deal with it with him looking over my shoulder. But I also didn't want to divulge this to my friends. I was not proud, obviously, of what I was perceiving in my own mind. And we're talking my Christian network of friends who I would run to for anything. In the same vein, I'm starting college at the university where I knew a lot of people because of my dad's previous role on the university as Direct Alumni Association. So anytime I saw somebody that I knew, they knew that he had been blackmailed by one of the staff members he had a relationship with. So I turned and went the other way. So I just didn't want to be in a conversation. It wasn't something that I was wanting to connect with. So I was very lonely in that respect. So I went back in my shell and it took me a while to then go through the process of understanding, okay, if my dad's homosexual, I'm going to make sure I'm not homosexual. What does that represent? Well, the frontal lobe in a teenager is not too good. So I started sleeping with a lot of women and it was very shameful in respect to what path that led me down. And that proceeded to continue for many years. I was blessed coming out of college. I did have a girlfriend in college. And one of the things that was a challenge in my life is I did get her pregnant. It's very sad to wake up one morning and not only find out your girlfriend's pregnant and go through that process, but I had also broken up with her 2 weeks prior and realizing that it was not a relationship that was going to be good, even if we were going to stay together just because of the child. So we had heartfelt conversations and God, this is the tough one for me to even think that this is a God's grace working, but he had plans in my life and wasn't going to include a baby at that time, and she ended up having a miscarriage. So I am distraught. I am really concerned about what I'm doing in my life, but yet I'm not hurting enough that I'm making a change. So I get out of college and start my first job. And with that, I am
part of my training is in Dallas and New York and really having fun and making stupid decisions on an ongoing basis. An example is we go out to a bar and we're betting, putting money on the table with the guys and saying, who's going to dance with the ugliest girl? It's not something you're proud of when you look back over your shoulder. So again, making poor decisions, and nothing really changed in my life until I moved to Atlanta. I was very blessed. God had a plan. I came here, and it took God introducing me to my now wife. Her name's Donna, and we've been married for over 30 years. And the way he did it was miraculous. We're talking, this is Valentine's Day. I'm in Cincinnati on a business trip, and it's an early bird flight coming back. I'm being shuttled around in Cincinnati for business purposes, and I'm half asleep checking in, and she's in uniform, deadheading to Atlanta, which means she's a passenger as well, but she's in uniform. So I was awake enough knowing that that's a cute girl and I want to start a conversation. So no more than 5 minutes, we talked, we get on the plane, we don't sit together, we don't talk. I'm getting off the plane, I give her my business card, and that was it. I'm fast forwarding real quick because I know I don't have much time. So the very next day I get a call and get on the phone at my office, and it's her. She announced herself as Donna from Kentucky. I did not realize Kentucky International Airport is across the river. Or excuse me, Cincinnati International Airport is across the river in Kentucky. And of course, that's where she lived, close to the airport. So she didn't do me any favors in that respect. And my second line was, I guess it's been a while. How are you doing? So you didn't hang up on me, obviously. So it worked out. But yes, I gave her grief on the basis of, you can at least throw me a bone and say, put Cincinnati in there somewhere. But no, my next blunder in my life, again, second chances is the theme here, is we have a long distance relationship between she and I. She could fly down to Atlanta, obviously being a flight attendant with Delta. But I still thought long distance relationship's probably not going to work. And I'm still dating. The last date I ever went on, that was not obviously with my wife, it's a formal event, and it's in Midtown Atlanta. As I'm driving to pick up my date, who gave me terrible directions to where she was staying with a friend, I end up in a car wreck, totaled my car. So again, God's playing a role in my life, and that didn't turn out to be a good night, obviously, with my date. So that's when I realized, okay, I need to start, refocusing and paying attention to what God's trying to tell me. At that point, Don and I had a conversation, and I had to do a mea culpa. Obviously, I told her that I was going out with the guys that night. So, I have to own up to that one. And so she stuck with me through that process, and she ended up moving to Atlanta shortly thereafter, and we ended up getting married within 4 years. And fast forward, because I don't know, I'm already running out of time, probably getting my red light over here. But the aspect of what occurred then is I knew that she had a family history of infertility. So it was getting married to a woman that I didn't know whether or not we're going to be able to have children. I don't know if you're familiar with endometriosis, but that's what she was dealing with. She ended up having multiple surgeries to try to correct the problem, which created scar tissue and other problems. But we got married, we were seeing a specialist, and it went for another 4 years in the process of trying to have a baby. Now, understand, I'm on the sideline saying, practice is good, I'm not complaining. But still, there's stress in the process. And with that stress, she ended up having an ectopic pregnancy and losing a fallopian tube. At the point we did that, we were going through inseminations, I think at least a half dozen, if not more. And the doctor basically said, we've got to pause. I want to see you back in 6 months. Most likely it's going to have to be IVF, which is in vitro fertilization, which is in excess of 10 grand, which is not covered by insurance. So we were really having to do some soul searching and saying, do we want to adopt? What's our thoughts? What's the next step in our lives? So we did a lot of prayer and we de-stressed, which I think was big as well. 6 months later, we show up at the doctor's office, and in the process of every time she went in the door to the doctor's office, a specialist, they would do an initial exam. So we're sitting in the doctor's office. He walks in with a shit-eating grin on his face. And we're like, is this a joke? Where, we're thinking very positive in terms of, or very serious in terms of our next step. And he just said, I'm glad y'all are sitting down.
because I'm not believing this myself. I gave you less than a 15% chance of having children on your own, but your wife is pregnant. So God threw us a bone. He graced us totally. And we have had three boys without any help in that respect, other than God, of course. So God had a plan, and he has blessed us with three boys. My oldest is now 27. We are grandchildren. We just had our second one, who's born December 2nd. And the oldest is just adorable. It's going to be two in May, and I'm having fun throwing her in the air and having all kind of grandpa fun. But the end of the story is that I ended up becoming my dad's power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney. In the process of becoming the power of attorney, I had to reface my dad in the struggles that I went through and working through the forgiveness process. And I have to say, I stumbled many times in that, trying to give him grace, but also wanting to be a spiritual leader in the process for my boys and trying to show them to honor your father. And that's probably been the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And I know I stumbled many a times, and God, you know, God graced me in the process. But in the end, I think that with the help of a chaplain that was a part of hospice, I think my dad came to Christ. So only God knows. I will find out, obviously, when I get there in the appropriate time. But I thank you. I know that there's other things I wanted to share, but I'm already out of time. And my challenge, if you guys want to, I'm going to read a quick scripture here in terms of rejoice and suffering. Romans 5:3-5. Not only so, but we also rejoice in our sufferings, because we know sufferings produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. And hope does not disappoint us, because God has poured out his love into our hearts by the Holy Spirit, whom he has given us. And in radical mentoring, we are out of time, but my challenge to you all, if you want to come home on this, is real quick, raise your hand if you are have a son or a son-in-law, or you're currently a grandfather. Raise your hand. Most of the room. Okay. So this is applicable. So what fatherly advice would you, if their son was sitting here, your son-in-law was sitting here, what advice would you give them from a Christian perspective? And where are you in your walk with your son or son-in-law in that respect and sharing? My favorite celebration of life story, I'm going to end it on this. Very good friend who was a mentor to me as I was becoming a father, with the mentality of doing the opposite of what my father did, was my only logic to becoming a parent, not doing what he did, which is not a good approach. Lee O'Neill was raised by a father who just poured his Christian life into him. And he had an incredible spirit himself. And at his dad's celebration of life, this got me teary-eyed, but I went to the celebration of life, and his story went as this. His dad called him up no more than probably 6 months before he passed and said, my car, I need a new brake job. And Lee's comment was, well, you know, we got a good mechanic. Great, Dad. You know, why don't we set an appointment with a mechanic? And his dad's response is, well, I think we can do a better job. And of course, knowing that Lee realized his dad wanted to spend a little time with him and bond with him in the process. So Lee said, no problem. I'll get the parts. You come over on Saturday and we'll get it done. So his dad pulls up. Lee's got all the parts and had a folding lawn chair ready for his dad. His dad's sitting down. Lee dumps out the parts, turns the bucket over, sits on the bucket. And his son, Lee's son, comes out and is ready to do the work, unbeknownst to his grandfather. So his son gets under the car. Lee's feeding him the parts. Not a lot said. Halfway through, his grandfather, or I should say Lee's dad, leans over and whispers in Lee's ear, how does my grandson know how to do that? His response is, because you taught me. So my focus is pay it forward. You know, stay focused and be plugged in. And I'm honored to say that my boys know how to change the oil in their cars. So thank you all for your time.
Yeah, you want to speak?
Well, I don't think I can follow that. But this is not too old, so this will be second. you'll start to see some. You want me to hear you? I guess that's a good thing. We always get better.
But we would think.
That's why you have a garage.
Yeah, that's why I have a garage. I like that.
Okay, you're going to start to hear some and see some things about a project that we're involved in. It's called Finish Strong. Anybody heard about it yet?
Nope.
Okay. Well, like one person has. I know that. Anyway, this is going to kick off in the next week or so. So it'll be something we'll see. We're still trying to pay for the common. So you knew that's going to be what I was going to talk about. So that's not a surprise. Anyway, we are still looking for about $885,000, and we have got a pretty concentrated program that's going to kick off quickly. It'll be handled through a number of different venues, but one of them will be through Sunday school classes, small groups. There's going to be invitational lunches like we had initially, and they'll also be things set in church. So I just wanted you to be aware of it. You will probably get a letter, it's a general letter, and then there'll be information, a card like this and a card like this. And this is not going to go past Palm Sunday. That's going to be the end of it. So there's not going to be conflict with a whole bunch of other stuff. In trying to get the funding done for this, we've had different things that have happened during the year that we can't compete with. Can't compete with Christmas. And can't compete with Thanksgiving. So we can't compete. You know, so this is a window between now and Palm Sunday to get this done. So you'll see more about it. I just wanted to expose you to it. It's the first group that we've talked to. Be aware of it. I've got a card. You can take a look at it. And these are some of the pieces that you'll see. But Tom is probably going to mention it in this Sunday's service, and that'll kind of start it. But at least since I knew we only get to see each other twice between now and then, I wanted to make sure that you knew about it and knew about it up front. And Charles, of course, was a key part of the project. He ran the project. I put the meetings together, and he did all of it. But anyway, yeah, that's pretty much it. But if anybody wants to see this at any point, I've got it. And now you're aware of it. So if somebody asks you if you have, and we also want to thank the people that have donated, you'll be surprised, I think, to know that the total number of folks that have donated has been about 100. Out of the population, church population that we have, that's a very small number. There have been probably donation, loose cash in the plate. But so overall, I think there were a lot of people that were apprehensive about donating to a project based on a rendering like that one over there. Yeah, I'll do something with it when I see it, kind of thing. Well, you've walked it, you've seen it, and I suggest that you see it at night. If you haven't done that, it's incredible. It really is. And all the feedback has been positive. We've not really had anybody come back and say, why did we do this? I don't like it. What's it, you know, we have lumpy lawn, so I know that, but we're fixing that. We can't do it until the spring. So anyway, please think, now that it's reality, think about making a donation towards it. We'd like to get it, if we could, get it done. And people say, why do you want to get this done? Well, our line of credit cost us about $5,000 a month. And as long as we had things going on, that was fine. Now we don't. So we need to, in order to eliminate excessive interest payments, we'd like to pay it off as soon as we can. And that credit line is through 25. So, and they've already offered to extend it at the same 6.7 rate.
I'm sure.
Really a good rate. So, but the idea is to get it paid off so it doesn't wind up being an ongoing thing. So that's it. I hope that was short enough. Thanks.
All right. That's what we have for today. So,
I'm going to close this out with prayer. I want to take just a minute to build on what Lance said. To come up here and be transparent in front of people you know and you don't know well is a hard thing to do. Those of you who raised your hand, that includes me, with a son or a son-in-law, who would benefit from mentoring where you learn how to be transparent and get closer to God in the things that really happen in your life and in your family's life is a powerful, powerful experience. And I've gotten to see Lance go through a lot of that in the last 2 years. We're in the process of having information meetings with the fathers of confirmands. Those men are all in the red zone, meaning they're trying to be a good dad, a good husband, a good provider. They've got all these pressures. And life oftentimes throws curveballs in the midst of that. A health concern, a job change, a career plan that you're like, whoa, I didn't anticipate that. So if you were one of those men that raised their hand with a son or a son-in-law, or you know somebody who's in that, we want to make mentoring available to them. And so I'll put up a QR code here when we're done, and we'll include an email for them to sign up, because we're trying to open up a year-long program to help those men get closer to God, to get closer to each other. And so Lance has now been through that training and now is in a position that he can be one of those mentors. And to see the transformation in his life and in his family has just been an extraordinary privilege. So thank you so much for giving him your trust and your attention this morning. You know, let him know down the road that you heard him, because he heard some in that process, and he shared that with you this morning. Are there other prayer concerns before we close out? Any celebrations? I know any new grandkids or? Yeah, Barney?
Sunday. 68 years. Married.
Married? Wow. 68 years? That's extraordinary. And you guys still come to choir together, too.
Yeah. And she still works with me.
That is amazing. She has not given up on you yet. That That's is extraordinary.
Right. I'm tagging in.
Love does, doesn't it?
Yeah, I got one.
Here you go, Lance.
Pray my wife will open her eyes to it's not a bad idea to have kids in our house during AYL.
A prayer for a host home. Wow, there you go. All right. It'll
be her decision.
Anybody else? All right. Dear Father, thank you for meeting us where we are. Thank you for sitting beside us when we just need company. Thank you for going before us and preparing the way. For preparing our hearts for a bigger, better relationship with you, and to be filled with the life with a capital L that's full of your love and your compassion and your sensitivity that sometimes is just beyond our understanding. Thank you for AYL and being altered by the altar. Thank you for walks to Emmaus that open us up to new ways of journeying through this world and to prepare for the next. Thank you for these men and their families and the people that they will come in contact with until we gather again. In thy name, amen.
Amen.